Well, hi everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Atomic Timekeeping Podcast. My name is Greg Anderson, and well, welcome back, or perhaps I should beg your welcome back. You may be wondering, what in the world is going on, Greg? You know, you haven't made a podcast in like 6 months. True, and without belaboring the point, I guess I just want to say that, you know, I've just kind of going through some rough times, and I'm not going to bore you with the details. I'll just say this much. As far as my personal life is concerned, relationships with family and friends, and, you know, that is all just fine. There's nothing wrong there. Basically, anything that has to do with business and money has been the mess. And, you know, I don't want to complain too much about the economy and start to sound like a newscast or a political rant or something like that. So I know that, you know, there's trouble out there for everyone. And whether you're, kind of a freelance, you know, be your own boss kind of guy like I am right now, or maybe even if you're working for a well-established company, times are tough. Employment can be a bit of a problem. And anyway. But I'm still here. And one of the reasons that I haven't done a lot as far as the Atomic Timekeeping Podcast these last few months is that there wasn't a whole lot to talk about. But there is now, so let's just get right into it. Now, one of the purposes of this podcast is to talk about the kinds of gadgets that people, you know, like we are into. You know, I figure if you like to have radio-controlled clocks around the house, or you have a certain interest in really precise timekeeping, then you're probably interested, as I am, in certain kinds of gadgets. So let's talk about those a little bit. And, the thing that has really thrown me off in the year 2010 as far as my gadget concerns go is Apple's iPad. What can I say? Just a little background here. You know, I never really cared that much about the iPhone. I knew people that had iPhones and they loved them, and that was fine. But as for, you know, personally, I just wasn't that interested in getting an iPhone. Partly because, you know, this is too much of a therapy session all of a sudden. You know, I really don't like talking to people on the phone. I prefer, you know, email or face-to-face or whatever. So I never thought that I would really want a very fancy phone. I do have a cell phone, but it's, you know, it's somewhat basic, you know, and that's fine. So the idea of getting a fancy iPhone and paying a lot of money for it and buying a lot of apps for it and paying a lot of, you know, for the monthly, you know, service fee on an iPhone, that just did not appeal to me, that idea. So, you know, as the year 2009 started to come to a close, and I was reading technology-related websites, and I was seeing the rumors about Apple was working on some sort of tablet computing device, I thought to myself, yeah, so what? You know, not interested. But I still paid attention to what was going on. And so it was January of this year that there was a big event down there in California where Steve Jobs came out and introduced the iPad to the world. And I saw this, some streaming video online of this event, and I saw the iPad that they were showing off, and I was interested. I thought the price was a little high compared to, you know, if you were to pay $500 for even a laptop computer, a PC, for example, you'd get a lot more for your money, I figured, than what this iPad was offering. But I still was intrigued by it, and so I continued to read about the iPad and different reports on, you know, as it was being developed and getting ready for the market. And then when it came out and was actually for sale, available to users, the average guy could go buy one in April, I was curious about that. So they released it on a Saturday, and Oh, I was busy that day. But by Monday, on my way home from work, I did drop by the Apple store in Salt Lake City to check out the iPad, to see this thing for myself. So, and when I did, I kind of went, yeah, that's a very interesting device. But I didn't buy it, you know, for a number of reasons. Primarily, I just figured it was the idea of financial responsibility, because, you know, it's a lot of money to pay for something like that just out of the blue. And, you know, without getting too political, I think it is a good idea to perhaps not spend money that you don't yet have, right? So... it became a plan. You know, well, let's save up. Let's put a little money aside every month, and then, you know, when we're ready, we'll decide if we want to get an iPad. When we've got the money to just do it. The other thing that prevented me from buying an iPad right there at the start was I was a little bit cautious about when there's a brand new product that sort of is the very first of its kind on the market, as the iPad is, you know, there's a certain amount of caution involved with, well, do I really want to buy this, or do I want to wait until they come up with version 2 of this product, right? So after you've got, you know, lots of people have used the thing, and you get to see, well, what's good about it, what's not good about it, what needs to be improved, all the different you know, feedback they're getting from users. You know, wait for version 2 of the iPad, because it'll no doubt be better than version 1 and probably cost less. Or even if it costs the same, it'll be better and still cost the same. So that was my thinking. Wait for version 2 of the iPad. The other thing, you know, and you may think, well, that's kind of foolish, you know, because it takes a year for Apple to usually put out a new version of a product. You want to wait a whole year? Wouldn't you rather just enjoy the iPad now? And I was getting that, you know, from things I was reading about and people talking about, you know, this. But I did remember that when the iPhone was first introduced, it was less than a year. In fact, it was just a couple of months. It was very quickly they came out with an improvement on the iPhone. And I figured, well, maybe since this is a first generation device, maybe within 6 months there'll be version 2. So I was holding on to these ideas of I'm just going to wait and get version 2 of the iPad. And this is a long story, I'm sorry, but the bottom line is September 1st of this year, at the event that they had on September 1st, they introduced the new line of iPods, the little portable music players. And so I paid attention to that event. And I was not very impressed by the improvements that they had made on the iPods. It seemed like, you know, the iPod Touch, the only really significant improvement they made on this was that they added a camera. So you could use this, you know, video chat software that Apple has that had been introduced earlier for the iPhone. And I thought, well, you know, that's not important to me. Then they took the iPod Nano, which I thought was a very impressive device before, and they changed it into this little tiny thing that just didn't impress me very much. It was smaller. Yeah, it had a touch screen, but who cares? Because the previous iPod Nano was fine with its larger case and its non-touch screen. It was fine. So what they did is the new Nano, they shrunk it and, you know, actually took away some features but still retained the same price as the one from the previous year. So there I was on September 1st evaluating my reaction to the new iPod line and finding myself not very impressed by either the improvements that they had made on the products, and especially not impressed with the prices that they were still charging for these products. So, So that's when I made my decision, basically, that maybe it wasn't going to be worth the wait to get Apple's iPad version 2, and that it was probably still going to take, you know, at least 4, 5, maybe 6 more months before they would bring the thing out, and maybe the only improvement they would really have on it that would be significant would be adding a camera so that I can do video chatting with, you know, people who have iPhones. And I just thought, okay, now it's no longer worth the wait as far as trying to get a better version of the iPad. But, you know, then it's just a matter of, do we have the money? And, well, my wife surprised me the next day. Guess what? We had the money. And so, yeah, that's my long story of how I decided, let's get an iPad. So, all right, I have an iPad. And I know if you listen to the last episode of the podcast that I did many months ago, it was right about the time the iPad came out. And I was very, very curious about them. Well, now that it's here, I can tell you more about the iPad that I have. And, well, let's, you know, I know it's a neat gadget, and we can talk all about the gadgets. And if you don't have an iPad, but you're interested in one, I'm happy to tell you more about my experience with the iPad to kind of help you decide, you know, if you'd like to have one of your own. But let's focus here a little bit on timekeeping, okay? The iPad. Well, how about it as a timekeeping device and as a fun gadget? Okay, well, let's talk about the timekeeping. Now, I had heard before I even got an iPad that it didn't have some of the clock functions that were available in the iPhones, for example. And so a lot of people thought that was a really stupid thing. Why didn't they put more clock functions in this, specifically an alarm? The iPad that you get now does not have a built-in alarm clock or any kind of, you know, application in there that will function as an alarm clock. What? You know, and I'm thinking that's kind of a boneheaded thing. Even my iPod Nano that I bought in 2007 has an alarm clock in it. I can, you know, it's not real loud. It might not wake me up if I was really, really tired, but, you know, an alarm. My cell phone that's not very fancy has an alarm. Why didn't they put an alarm clock in the iPad? So I was just kind of annoyed by that because I thought, well, all right, I can go to the app store and I can find an app that has an alarm clock for the iPad. Okay. And I actually looked into this before I even got an iPad. And sure, there are some alarm clocks that are free apps that you can get for the iPad. But I still thought it was annoying that I would have to buy one, you know. Well, but then I realized, okay. Even though I still think it's a boneheaded thing to not have that in the iPad, it did allow a lot of very creative people to develop clock and alarm clock apps for the iPad, which some of them are really, really quite fun. And I'll talk about those in just a moment. Now, the iPad, of course, does have a clock in it, but it's much like the clock in any other computer that you may have. And we've talked about this on previous episodes of this podcast. Your computer's internal clock is not very accurate. It, you know, it's going to gain or lose time pretty significantly over the course of a few days. And maybe by the end of the month, it might be off by, you know, minutes, which in my world is unacceptable. But most every computer that people use in their homes and offices will have an internet connection. And again, I've talked in a previous podcast about how if you use some of the stuff that's built into Windows and Mac operating systems, you can have the computer automatically go to the internet, find some sort of atomic timekeeping source, and then synchronize the computer's internal clock to that, so that you know, your clock's going to be just within a few seconds of the exact correct time, if not, you know, even better than that. I've got an Apple computer that's actually, every time I look at it, the time is just right on. You know, hours, minutes, seconds is always right. So, okay, so that's great. Now the iPad, like these other computing devices, if left to on its own, the clock in it is going to drift and not keep time very well. I'm looking at my iPad, and I haven't confirmed this exactly. I'm not paying too close attention to it, but I think that the clock in the iPad perhaps drifts by at least 5 seconds a day. So it runs a little bit fast. So, you know, at the end of a week, the clock could be off by 30 seconds, maybe a lot more than that, maybe a full minute off. You know, so that's annoying to me. So, okay, how do I deal with that? Well, one thing is that just like an iPod, the iPad will update its internal clock when you synchronize it to the computer that you're using for synchronizing. And of course, just before I started recording this podcast, I confirmed this. I set the iPad clock off by like 6 hours. And then I plugged it into the PC that I use to manage the iPad through iTunes. And as soon as the synchronization was complete, the iPad clock was then only wrong by about, you know, 1 second. So that's good. So if you synchronize your iPad to your computer every day, you're probably going to do all right. But if you tend to leave the iPad, unsynchronized to a computer, and you just charge it up using the wall charger or whatever, and you don't synchronize very often, well, the clock may drift significantly. So I don't really have a solution for that, but I do have some apps that I've found that, let's talk about. First, I have a few apps, and if you want to go to the App Store, if you've got an iPhone or an iPad, it's just, you know, through Apple, and you can access it through iTunes if you've got iTunes running anyway. And, you know, just do a search in there for clock apps and you'll find a lot of stuff. Many of them free, some of them better looking than others. And some of them with, you know, more functions than others. Sometimes you'll find the same developer may have a version of an app that you have to pay for, you know, 99 cents or $1.99 or whatever the price is for that app. But then they might have a kind of a stripped down version of the app that's available for free. And so, you know, I tried a lot of the free ones out and then from there kind of decided, well, you know, is this worth upgrading to the paid version? I spent a couple dollars and get the paid version or what? So I have several free clock apps that are kind of fun. One, well, I'll just start with kind of the sillier ones. There's one called Text Time. And all it does, it just fills the whole iPad screen and just has a readout of the time written out, you know, in longhand English. So, you know, it'll say it's 8:31 p.m. written out, no numbers in there, you know, numerals, but the words written out, it's 8:31 p.m. And then a minute later, it's 8:32 p.m., you know, so, okay, that's kind of interesting. Now, the trouble there is, you know, you run an app like that and that's it. The iPad, in at least currently, very soon they're going to have multitasking available through the updated iOS, the operating system that it uses. But at the moment, you know, an app like that is just, it just fills the screen. And if you just want to stare at that on the iPad, then that's all you get. Others I have, there's one called a Dali clock, kind of based on some of the artwork of Salvador Dali, you know, with that weird dreamlike thing where maybe you've got you know, something that's supposed to be a solid object looks like it's more like a liquid object, and all this kind of weird imagery of Dali. Well, here's the Dali clock, which does have numerals, but as it changes, as the seconds update, you know, from 25 to 26 to 27 seconds, for example, the numbers just kind of almost melt into each other. So that's kind of an interesting effect. And then the background color kind of changes. And, well, it's just, you know, it was free, you know. Whatever. There's one called the Wink Clock HD that I like. It's just, it almost looks like a bullseye with these bright colors. And well, you know, I'll have to include some screenshots of these things that I'm talking about in the official notes to this podcast. And if you want to look at those, it's atomicelmer.blogspot.com for the official notes of this podcast. So, you know, try that out. Yeah, I'll put some images in there and some links, and you can start looking up these things if you're interested. I got some other, you know, free apps that offered, you know, alarm clocks and maybe a little weather report in the corner of the screen. Because when you're using an internet connection with the iPad, a lot of these apps will try to determine your location. So you can disable that if you don't want that, but it's kind of useful if, for example, it's a map app or some other app that, you know, may benefit from knowing where you are so that it can better interact with you. For example, I did find a sunrise and sunset app, which, you know, it just, you know, the current date, it gives you the official sunrise and sunset times, and then figures out the length of daylight for that day. And it's based, of course, on my location as determined by, you know, GPS or whatever you're using. This iPad I have does not have the 3G service on there. 3G being, you know, data connection through AT&T's cellular phone network. So the way I connect my iPad to the internet is just using Wi-Fi only. I don't have the 3G. 3G would be useful if I were in a place where, you know, I couldn't get Wi-Fi, like if I'm out camping or something, or if I'm, you know, in the car or whatever. But for my current lifestyle, if I'm driving, it's usually a commute and I'm by myself. So therefore, I probably shouldn't be using the iPad while I'm driving. And basically everywhere I go has Wi-Fi if I'm at home or at an office or whatever. So it's very rare that I would really desperately need a 3G connection to use the internet with the iPad. Plus, then I avoid the extra charges, the monthly charges of using 3G. So that's, you know, that's my situation. However, and maybe you've found some other way to realize this before, but if you didn't, and I'm not exactly sure how it works, but using the different Wi-Fi nodes and some calculations that, again, I don't quite fully understand, the iPad is usually able to determine my location just using Wi-Fi. So I don't mind that, because it does make some of these apps more fun to use. If the app knows that I'm at home, and so mapping stuff or determining sunrise and sunset times for my location at home is fun, or if I'm at, you know, someone else's place, or, you know, then it determines those things for me there. So that, I like that. So where was I? Well, okay. I want to talk about a clock app, and it's called Emerald Time, from a company called Emerald Sequoia. I will go ahead and you know, post a link or some screenshots in the show notes here. Emerald Time is the app, and it fills the whole screen of the iPad, and it's a free app. So, and it's, I believe, what they call a universal app. So it will work with both the iPad and the iPhone and configure itself to best utilize the graphics capability of whichever of those devices you're using. And also the iPod Touch. So if you're using the smaller screens of the smaller portable devices, you know, it'll optimize itself to look good on those screens. And if you're using the just giant, you know, iPad screen, it'll optimize itself for that. And so that's kind of fun. Now, the Emerald Time app, well, it gives you the date and the time. And they said, well, okay, that's pretty obvious. You know, it just takes that from the iPad, doesn't it? Oh, no, it's better than that. What it does is it actually uses Network Time Protocol, or NTP, servers on the internet to obtain what they call a more accurate time than is typically available from the device's internal clock. Okay, so you turn this thing on, and provided you have an internet connection, either through 3G or through the Wi-Fi, it goes out and checks with time servers. And then what it's actually displaying on the screen is the correct atomic time that it's getting off the internet. And by comparing the time that it receives from all these different servers, it's able to determine, okay, you know, what is the time. And so the time readout I have here is hours, minutes, seconds, and tenths of a second. So that's kind of fun. It also has a little graphic that kind of displays, you know, what it's getting from the time servers that it's looking at. And then it's got a little, well, right now it's a little green dot. I'm running the iPad right now. The green dot means it's getting a really good, you know, amount of data from the internet, so it's able to determine the correct time, and it's very confident in what it's able to display. And then there's a little spot here where it's telling me the offset. And since I recently synchronized this iPad with my computer that had recently synchronized itself with a time server, it's telling me that the iPad's clock is 0.692 seconds off from atomic time. So that's not bad. Now, earlier today, it was like 18 seconds off from atomic time. But using this Emerald Sequoia app, I was able to, you know, show the correct time. Now, unfortunately, the current version of the operating system in these Apple devices, the iPhone, the iPad, or the iPod Touch, doesn't allow the operating system does not allow an app like this to then go in and change the time in the device itself. So the best I can do is display the correct time through this app, but it's, you know, it's not going to correct what's incorrect about the device's clock. Anyway, but you know, 0.692 seconds is not bad for me right now. This is a free app. I'll attempt to give you a link that might take you right to the App Store. So if you just happen to have one of these Apple portable devices, you got to have this app. If you don't have this app, and it's free, and it works with iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad, I mean, go get it. Come on, it's free. Now, the same company makes an app that is not free, and it's the Emerald Observatory app. Now, it's not free, but it's 99 cents, you know, plus tax. And for my money, it's totally worth it. So I would highly recommend. Now, this one is only available for the iPad. I think the reason behind that is most likely the fact that it really needs to have the larger screen to show you all the stuff that it's trying to show you here all at once. So I'll give you some screenshots on this one, but this one's beautiful. So again, I'm sorry, you know, if you got an iPhone or an iPod Touch, you know, you just can't use this app. But on the iPad, it's beautiful. It's it has what looks like a very fancy clock face. I mean, sometimes you see very fancy wristwatches that might have multiple dials inside an analog watch. sort of looks like that. But it's got tons of information inside this clock. So, you know, you've got just kind of an analog clock there. Inside that dial, you have a separate clock to show you the UTC time. And that's a 24-hour clock, so that's kind of fun. Hours, minutes, and seconds on that UTC clock. Another smaller dial shows what's called sidereal time. I hope I'm pronouncing that one right. It has something to do with the time, astronomical time, really, that doesn't quite match the time that, you know, that that we call UTC. And so it's got its own little dial to show you that time. And then it also has a little dial to show you solar time. Now, I live in the general Salt Lake City, Ogden area of Utah. And so we're not right on, you know, the middle of our time zone, where typically the sun reaches its highest point in the sky at noon. Now, we're a bit off from that. And because of daylight saving time, the sun reaches its highest point in our sky right now at about 1:15 in the afternoon. So this actually has an indicator to show me where that is, where the sun transit occurs on this 24-hour dial that's on the outer edge of this large clock. And so it's got that indicator there to show me, but also it has within the inner dial a small clock that's labeled solar, so it's giving me solar time. So when the sun reaches its highest point in the sky at my location, the solar time dial will show straight up high noon, 12:00. So I can compare that with the real, which one is the real time? You know, the one that's mandated by Congress or the one that's mandated by the sun? So all that is included in here, plus some stuff, you know, where the zodiac signs are located in the sky, and also a little map of the world where you take the globe and you kind of flatten that out to a rectangular map of the world. And this shows, it's got a little red dot to show my location, but also on this map, it shows what's called the terminator line, that line that separates where there's daylight in the world and where it's nighttime in the world. So that line is represented on here, and that will adjust itself to show, how that terminator line changes throughout the year based on, you know, the Earth's rotation on its axis. So that's kind of fun. Something like you'd find in the Geochron clocks that are very expensive, or the World Watch software, which gets a bit pricey itself. Well, that's just a little window here in this 99-cent app that shows that map. And then over here on the left side of the screen, it has a couple of dials to show you, to help you find some objects in the sky. For example, I'm recording this podcast and it's past sundown. So there's a dial here that's labeled sun azimuth, and it's showing that the sun, compared to my location, would be just barely north of west on the compass, but at an altitude of about minus 30 degrees in the sky, which means the sun is down already. But let me pick an object that would be, and if I just kind of tap these dials with my finger, it changes to another object, and well, here's the moon. It's showing me that the moon is just a little bit south of due east of me right now, and that the moon is almost 30 degrees up in the sky. So if I, you know, walk outside and look just barely south of east, about 30 degrees up in the air, I'm going to see the moon. And in fact, I'm recording this podcast on a night of the full moon, The official full moon started about an hour ago, and so here I am, and this app is showing me, you know, trying to help me find the moon. In fact, the dial on the larger clock in this app has little rings around it to indicate Mercury, Venus, Mars, Saturn, Jupiter, and the moon. And so it indicates what time of day those celestial objects will rise above the horizon and when they will set, you know, on the western horizon. So it just so happens that tonight, at this moment, there's a line, a little pointer indicating that right now I could see Jupiter or I could see the moon from my location, but the other objects, Mercury, Venus, Mars, and Saturn, will have already set by this time. Anyway, it's a wonderful app. Even allows you to look at times other than right now. There's a little button, a little place you press on the screen in the upper middle of the screen that says set. And if you hit the set button, you can move ahead by a number of minutes, hours, days, months, years, or even phases of the moon. If I say, well, you know, I'd rather look ahead to the next phase of the moon, and it's showing me that the next phase of the moon is happening October 30th. And from my location, that's going to happen at 6:46 a.m. Mountain Daylight Time. And so, you know, it even shows me on the readout where the moon will be in the sky at that moment and what time of day that's going to be. And so that's all there, and that's really cute. And so, or I could move backwards in time and look, well, you know, what did things look like in the sky last month or last year or so. It's a really fun little app, and it's very pretty. And it uses atomic time, and it's only 99 cents. And so, again, doesn't work with the iPhone or the iPod Touch. But if you've got an iPad, I mean, come on. If you're going to spend 99 cents on any app, boy, you might as well spend it on that one. Now, I found also, as long as I'm here, let's talk about another app that I bought. This, again, was 99 cents, and it's called World Clock Pro. Okay, and I'll see if I can get you the link to this one, World Clock Pro. And I believe this one is also a universal app, I think. I'll have to check on that. So I think it will work with you know, all the portable Apple devices, not just the iPad. I really like this one because, you know, I've talked previously about WorldWatch software, and this is affiliated with the Geochron timekeeping device, just an elegant timekeeping device, but expensive. But it has that map of the world with that Terminator line separating daylight from darkness and showing you where that's happening in the world at any given time. I like it because I'm just interested in that kind of stuff. But others may find it very useful if they're doing a lot of international business. You know, I know a guy who does a podcast down in Australia. And I've never actually met him face to face, but we've become well acquainted over the internet, and it's just always fun to listen to Bruce's podcast down in Australia. And you know, always wondering, well, what time is it where Bruce is right now? Well, guess what? I use this World Clock Pro app, and well, and then I can set Sydney, Australia, to be one of the cities that I just monitor. It's got, well, let me just show you, or tell you at least. There's a page here where it shows various cities around the world that you have selected, and you can push a little button and choose more cities to add to the clocks that will be displayed here. Then there's a comparison screen where it, at the top of the page, shows the current time where I am. And then for all these cities that I've selected, it shows me the date and time currently in that city. It also allows me to click and drag. Instead of just looking at the current time, I can drag ahead and say, well, what about tomorrow? You know, it's 7:45 p.m. What time will it be elsewhere when it's 7:45 p.m. for me tomorrow? And so there's a line that just goes down this chart and shows you for all these different cities that I've selected. Well, you know, it's going to be, you know, 3:45 p.m. in Honolulu at that time. But, you know, but it's actually going to be in Bangkok, it'll be, 8:45 a.m. the next day, you know. And so anyway, that's all on there. And then there's a map page that has a full screen, fills the page with that map of the world with the, displaying the sunrise, sunset, and also the cities that I've selected appear on the map. And this is somewhat customizable. And it's just a really pretty app. And since I love the Geochron, but you know, I can't afford one, I'm thrilled to spend 99 cents and have one on my iPad. And so anyway, those are just some fun things. I hate to talk too much about Apple products because I know some people are just annoyed by Apple, and I understand that. But you know, what can I say? Gadgets are fun, and the iPad has dominated a lot of my thoughts about gadgets this year. So I might as well, you know, spend 99 cents here and there, and enjoy the product. As much as possible. There are other, of course, apps that have to do with weather and astronomy, and many of them are free. Some of them are, you know, not free at all. And like I said, there are a lot of apps that are sort of stripped down free versions of an app that you may want to pay a little bit of money for to get the full version of the app. But I have yet to fully explore all the fun of this iPad and all the possibilities. So there are certainly there's a lot of potential here. And once again, I still have to admit it's a little pricey when you compare how far, you know, $500 or $600 could go towards a regular kind of computer, but I'm having a good time with this. So, all right. Well, anyway, I do strive to create new episodes of this podcast on the 15th and on the last day of every month. So obviously, I haven't been doing that for quite a while now. I'm hoping that things will settle down at least enough that I can, keep up to date. And if there is anything of note to tell you about in the world of timekeeping, let's talk about it. Now, I did receive an email earlier today from a podcast listener, and I'll be somewhat discreet because I don't necessarily have permission from this person to share, but this is James, or Jim, who is down in Florida, and let me just read you what Jim sent to me today. He sent me an email, a few weeks ago, just telling me that he was listening to the podcast and had a couple questions about that. In fact, let me address his previous email, as long as I'm here. Jim was asking me about if there was any way to listen to the WWV broadcasts over the internet instead of, I believe he was wanted to do that instead of trying to use a shortwave radio, to actually listen to the audio WWV broadcasts. And I was unable to find a streaming audio of that WWV broadcast. I could give you a sample of what it sounds like.
Acetone, 3 hours, 45 minutes, coordinated universal time.
You can, however, if you don't have a shortwave radio, you can still listen to this without a shortwave radio by making a telephone call. It's not a toll-free call. So you will have to pay long-distance charges unless, maybe, if you call it on your cell phone or if you have one of these long-distance charge, you know, plans with your just your regular landline service. You know, there are a lot of ways now that a lot of people have where they can make long-distance calls without any additional charges over their regular monthly rate, right? So if you've got something like that, you may want to make a phone call, and you can listen to WWV or WWVH, which is in Hawaii, and they have a female voice there, and you can make those phone calls and just listen for a couple of minutes over the phone. It's supposed to disconnect you after 2 minutes. I've called it a couple of times and, you know, listen for longer than that. But that might be kind of fun for you to listen to WWV if you don't have a shortwave radio. So I can give you the links there to those phone numbers if you'd like. But the one in Colorado, area code 303, you can call 499-7111. That's 499-7111 and the 303 area code, and you can listen to WWV. How's that? When I say it that way, you expect to have like cash prizes if you're the fifth caller or something, but no, that's not it. So if you call that, you can listen. And if you have a shortwave radio, you can listen there for, you know, all night long if you want. So that was what Jim was asking me about in a previous email. And so I hope that helped out. But he also told me, I'll just read his most recent email. He says, I have two battery-powered radio-controlled digital clocks and a radio-controlled Casio watch. I'll just insert that, you know, that sounds, you know, a man after my own heart there. He says, of those products, he says, which all receive a daily signal from WWVB. No problems. He says he lives in, I'll just say Florida because I want to be discreet here for Jim's sake. He says, however, I have a heck of a time getting audio reception on my shortwave radio from WWV. Okay. He says, I have two clocks placed right on top of my television. I have never had any problem with television interrupting the signal from WWVB. Well, that surprises me, actually. I only say that because that's one of the things that they specifically recommend, you keep these radio-controlled clock units away from computer monitors and TVs. But if he's not having problems, then I guess that's fine. Now, I would speculate, however, that maybe, you know, since Jim's probably not leaving his television on all night, you know, if he turns the TV off at night, overnight his clocks probably, you know, would just have no trouble with the TV anyway. So, yeah, that should be maybe something to clarify. If your TV is turned off, yeah, I don't think it's going to interfere with your radio-controlled clock reception. But if it's turned on all the time, I would expect it would. But anyway, Jim's having no trouble at all with his radio-controlled clocks and his watch. So that's cool. As far as the shortwave radio problem, listening to the WWV broadcast, I don't know. I'm not much of an expert on shortwave radios. The best shortwave radio I have right now is actually built into an old boombox. So, you know, and it works, and that's fine. But I just don't use it that often. There's too many other ways to listen to stuff. you know, now that we have streaming audio on the internet, or I listen to stuff that my friend Bruce records down in Australia, and I get the podcast that he makes, and it just sounds wonderful because he's a brilliant audio engineer. And, you know, and here it is, it's coming from Sydney, and I'm listening to it, you know, on an iPod or iPad or whatever, and just it sounds beautiful. So it's fun. Isn't it fun living in the modern world? All we need now is some sort of computer device that keeps great time all on its own with some sort of internal clock. But, you know, we'll work on that later. In the meantime, we have these wonderful apps and things to play with. So anyway, boy, thanks for hanging in there. I feel like I've rambled a lot, but, you know, I'll try to be more to the point next time. This is like, way, you know, the way overdue podcast episode. So anyway, any questions, you know, any comments, any feedback, or you just want to tell me, you know, stop being an Apple fanboy and throw that iPad out the window, or, you know, whatever you want to say. or say, I'm waiting for the Android device. That's great. You know, tell me about it when you get it. You know, we'll talk about whatever kind of apps that uses. So that sounds like fun. Those comments, and you can send them to me at my email address, atomicelmer@gmail.com. Okay, atomicelmer@gmail.com. Again, I'm going to try and put some links to some of these apps and things, and you can just have some fun with that. I'll put that on the official show notes of this podcast, and that is available if you just type in the following. It's atomicelmer.blogspot.com. And as you can probably tell, I've been distracted now. I'm just going to confirm that still works as I'm typing it into this iPad. Oh yeah, there it is. Look. Wow, I've got my official podcast on an iPad screen. Oh, and there's one of my YouTube videos on an iPad. This is great. I'm going to like walk into the kitchen and watch this, you know, while I'm making toast or something. That's great. All right. Well, yeah. So, yeah, that's all. Thanks. And I'll see you. I'll make another podcast here at the end of the month. Okay. All right. Thanks.